CliffCentral.com.
It is time for This Is Us, which is one of my favorite parts of the week, where we really get to take a long, hard look at ourselves as South Africans. I'm going to welcome, as usual, Yatish Nasi. How's it, Yatish? How are you?
Morning, everybody. How's it going?
Very good.
Hey, Tish.
We're here for our regular group therapy session on a Tuesday, which I think has become a part of many of our lives and something that we look forward to. So every Tuesday, Yatish and Labang and I do This Is Us. And as you know, it's a movement which has a mutual concern for us as South Africans in finding new solutions through new ideas and new alliances in order to overcome all of those obstacles and challenges which are currently facing South Africa. Every week we introduce you to some thought leaders and visionaries, and my goodness, in the last 2 weeks, we've had incredible input from Songezo Zibi, who really is one of the people I think many of us have respected for the longest time as a journalist, as someone who's understood corporate communications and all the rest. And before that, Bonang Mohale, who is the president of Business Unity South Africa and somebody who's got lots of good ideas for how we can overcome the challenges that lie before us. And overcoming challenges is what nation building is all about, and that's where we've got to go. Today, we're going to talk to a man with a sound understanding of South Africa's political history. He's somebody who really does know a huge amount about what happened in those early days of South Africa's history and where we come from. 30 years of experience in political, parliamentary, business, and civil society sectors. He worked in the ANC from 1987 to 1992 in the UK. He also was a special advisor to the Speaker of Parliament for some time. Union Alliance Holdings, currently Executive Secretary and member of the Advisory Council at CASAC, which is the Council for the Advancement of the South African Constitution, something which I think everybody is starting to see as a very, very important part of what makes this nation work, our Constitution. And anyone who is a person who's trying to advance the Constitution is surely a friend of the average South African. So his name is Lawson Naidu, and welcome, sir, to the show. How are you, Lawson?
Good morning, Gareth. Thank you very much.
It's very nice to
Glad
have you.
Glad to be with you.
Thank you. And it's very nice to have you on. You really have an extraordinary and deep experience of what it is to be a South African, and to be a South African in the glory of the Constitution post-1994, something which I think a lot of us have started taking for granted. So just tell us quickly, if you think back to those early days, and I think particularly about, you know, the Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who sadly passed in December, but the TRC, which was a way for us to reckon with our past, it was supposed to be. It was also a way for us to move forward with reconciliation. Many South Africans still feel today that it didn't do any justice to the victims, or that it didn't succeed really in bringing about deeply felt reconciliation. Why did we as a nation fail to reach that at that point? And is it the Constitution's fault too, while we're at that?
There's a lot in that question, Gav. You know, everything that goes wrong gets blamed on the Constitution without anyone being able to say why the Constitution might be at fault. Sometimes it might be. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I think the reality is that the Truth and Reconciliation process was an incredibly important one for South Africa to really reckon with the violence and brutality of our past on all sides. And I think it achieved some of its purpose in exposing what had happened, allowing victims to come forward to tell their stories, allowing people who committed some of those atrocities to come forward and tell their stories. But where it failed was in the follow-up. Once the report was tabled and made recommendations, one, for reparations to victims of atrocities, and secondly, that those who did not qualify for amnesty, either because they didn't come forward at all, or who came forward and did not provide a plausible story to the TRC, were not prosecuted. And we're only now beginning to deal with those issues. And I think that's where a lot of people feel let down, that those who committed the gross human rights violations in our past have gotten away with it. And there's a sense that that culture of impunity has prevailed through South Africa over several phases and in different areas of our lives. And so I think one of the fundamental issues we grapple with in South Africa today is how do we hold people to account?
Yeah.
Because right at the beginning, we didn't get it right.
But Lawson, I mean, it also it's easy with the benefit of hindsight to look back and say could have, should have, would have, right? We're imperfect. Our leaders have always been imperfect. Even the best of our leaders have been imperfect at some point. We've got to also be a little bit forgiving of the past. We were dealing with so much back in those days. You know, you were there in those heady days. There were many, many things on the table. We had to prioritize. We had to choose. It was going to be imperfect. Nobody in history has got it 100% right. And maybe being a little bit more generous and less judgmental now would behoove us. It would make us look like we were a little more advanced and learned than just reacting to the past and thinking that we could have done better.
Well, we could have done better, but you know, it's learning from those lessons, learning lessons from those times. What did we do wrong, and what should we do now to correct what we, you know, not necessarily to rewrite history and go back and resolve those issues from 20, 30 years ago, but how do we learn those lessons now and apply it to our current challenges and to the current difficulties that the country faces? I think that's really the challenge for us right now, because we've got to be a forward-looking people and a forward-looking country. How do we fix things now so that we create a better tomorrow for all South Africans? And I think that's where, you know, many of us are focusing. You know, how do we create or how do we make more real that vision in the Constitution of a more equal society based on human dignity and respect for fundamental human rights, as well as issues, as I say, fundamental for me is the issue of accountability. How do we hold people to account? Because the Constitution, at the end of the day, is a social compact. We, as citizens, give power to people in authority, elected leaders, and so on. But the part of that social compact is they must use that power for the purpose that we give it to them, and not to abuse it. And when they abuse it, we need to be able to hold them to account. And that's where we fail.
Lawson, yeah. You mentioned accountability. Sorry, I'm glad you did, because we just saw recently with the Zondo Commission that many, many people just confessed almost their, I could say, unscrupulous behavior, and quite easily, without fear of being prosecuted, because, you know, this is South Africa. And I guess once you've gotten away with doing something for that long, you don't have that fear anymore. So, like, you know, is it believed that very few of the state looters are going to pay any penalties at all? They, as I said, they're quite clearly just doing whatever they want to do and getting away with it. But if this does happen, that they do get away with these things that they've been exposed for, what happens then, and what may the consequences be for us as a country? I mean, we're democracy in transition. It's a very hairy time. And where does that leave us as a country if this happens?
Well, you know, again, there must be accountability. We cannot allow this culture of impunity to continue. So people come forward, they tell fanciful stories before the Deputy Chief Justice Zondo, you know, about why and how they got involved in this, and claimed that it was all innocent and, you know, there was no intention to do this, that, or the other. But the reality is that they looted from the state. They took money away from poor marginalized, that should be spent for the benefit of poor and marginalized people. And for that, they need to be held accountable. And this is why it is critically important that especially, you know, those architects of state capture and corruption are brought to book, are held to account, face criminal prosecution. And if the evidence is there, they must be found guilty and sent to prison. Because, you know, that's the only way of dealing with this. If we simply say, okay, now we know the truth, like we did with the TRC process, and then we do nothing further about it, we're going to find ourselves back in this situation in 20 or 25 years' time, facing the same kinds of crisis that we are today. So this is an opportunity for us to really say people cannot you know, treat other South Africans in the way that has been exposed by state capture. There must be a price to pay for what you've done. Because it's not just about stealing money, which is bad enough on its own. But in the process of doing that, you've weakened the foundations of our democracy by really weakening institutions. And it's going to take us years to rebuild that. And if we simply say, well, you know, we're going to forgive, forget, and move on, I don't think that's good enough. And I think as South Africans, we deserve more.
Yeah, Lawson, and that, you know, brings me to something I've I've really, I suppose, sort of debated and kind of struggled with, and it's great to be able to pick your brain on it. But, you know, it's to the point we made earlier, right? It's always an imperfect system. It's always, we're going to struggle with resource. We're going to struggle with, you know, the ability to act on all the recommendations. But, you know, to the point you just mentioned, what's interesting or what's unique about the sort of Zondo Commission is it's not just about individuals who are corrupt, right? And you said it. It's about the fact that institutions have been weakened. State institutions, sort of state enterprises as well. And so I suppose as a country, we've got to maybe make that decision to go, you know, where do we put our effort? Do we put our effort in trying to prosecute a few brazen individuals who, even to be honest, if they were found guilty of something, just don't seem to have the kind of moral compass to care? Or do we go and go, okay, what's been weakened and how do we quickly fix those things so that, you know, we don't have this happen again? And I guess that's going to be the sort of struggle, right? Where do we put our effort? Do we put our effort in trying to prosecute, which is difficult? Or do we put our effort in going, what's broken and how do we fix it so that, you know, because for me, it's like organized crime. I can take a dealer off the corner, but the network of organized crime still exists. And so somebody else takes his place, yeah. Or her place. So how do we, you know, you mentioned the architects of state capture. I want to talk about the foundations of state capture because, you know, even if you get rid of the architect, I'm worried the foundations still exist.
No, and you're absolutely right. The foundations still exist. The structures are still in place. And we saw it, you know, recently with the personal protective equipment scandals and corruption scandals around that,
right?
Which demonstrated to us that those, you know, those criminal syndicates that operate within the state are still there, and they were able to do it again under our very noses while the Zondo Commission was underway and the spotlight was on state capture, and yet they brazenly went out and looted from under our noses once again. So, you know, Yatish, we need to do both. We can't simply say we're going to do one and not the other. We've got to prosecute people. We've got to make sure that those who did loot, who did undermine the Constitution, are held accountable. But on the other hand, we've also, at the same time, we've got to fix the system of governance. We've got to make sure, for me, high priority is making sure that Parliament does its actual job, which is oversight over the executive, oversight over state institutions. And we've heard, you know, lots of evidence at the Zondo Commission about Parliament knew what was going on at SOEs, but for political expediency, turned a blind eye, shut off any further inquiry. And that cannot be allowed to continue.
Absolutely.
So we've got to do a bit of both. We've got to strengthen the institutions of state, so that these kind of things can't happen again. We've got to strengthen the NPA, make sure that they have access to more resources and capacity so that they can actually prosecute. Now, these things are difficult, particularly in the context where we know South Africa is in a fiscal crisis. We're going to hear a lot about that in the next couple of weeks when the Minister of Finance tables his budget.
Yep.
But, you know, there's talk that, you know, for example, the Minister of Finance is going to give more money to political parties. You know, is that really a priority when the NPA is screaming out for money?
You may well ask. I'm also curious, you know, there's something about this that ordinary people, because this is something we always get stuck on This Is Us, and it's something where we found solutions some of the time, but very often we find ourselves at a bit of a loss. Ordinary old us, me, you, Yatish, and Lebang this morning, and anyone who's listening, sometimes we aren't sure how we can get involved and how we can change things. Now, surely the first lesson has to be that this idea of personal accountability, we need to start engendering this in people. We need to start teaching young people, because they look around and, you know, kids are smart. They can see that if you steal R1 billion in South Africa, you very often get to keep it. But if you steal R500 from the bank or from an ATM or something, you often go to jail. It seems to me that, you know, that the higher your crime, the likelier you are to be exonerated, or at least to be ignored. And the politicians in this country have set a terrible example for us, because it's always someone else's fault. Is the Zondo Commission at least a start down the road to getting people to understand that ultimately it is up to you, and you are to be found responsible for your actions, that actions have consequences. Do you think that that's part of the big lesson that we can all partake in?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, you started off, Gareth, you spoke about the TRC. Mm. And I think, you know, we've had, you know, other significant commissions in the interim. You know, I think of the Farlam Commission of Inquiry into the Marikana massacre.
Right.
Where we haven't actually yet implemented the recommendations that Judge Farlam gave, you know, particularly regarding the use, when the police are able to use live ammunition, under what circumstances and how they should use, you know, rubber bullets and the like in crowd control. Mm-hmm. And we haven't heeded those warnings as yet, and we still see rubber bullets being used and people being killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we dare not make that mistake again with the Zonta Commission. You know, the commission has been going for 4 years. The final report is due in a couple of weeks' time. And we as a society, all of us need to take responsibility for making sure that the recommendations that are contained in the report are actually implemented. Because if we simply leave it up to government or parliament even to implement what's there, they won't do it because it doesn't suit their interest, because it's too politically sensitive and so on. So as broader society, we've got to make sure that those things do happen, that we do take the corrective measures that the Deputy Chief Justice is likely to recommend, particularly in his third report, and that we make sure that those things happen, and we make sure that that pressure is kept on the NPA to prosecute those that are implicated, and that we put pressure on the government to ensure that the NPA is properly resourced to be able to do that. So there's a whole range of things that need to be done. But if we're going to say at the end of the day, we've received this report, we've read it, we've now understood what has happened, and you know, we've learned our lesson, we've had a collective slap on the wrist, and we move forward, I'm afraid it'll happen again, because this culture of impunity will only have been strengthened if no action is taken.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lawson, speaking of which, this culture of impunity and so on, I think it was last year where Tulima Donsela suggested or gave her view on corrupt leaders and said, you know what, let's just give them all amnesty and let's just, you know, kind of just let's start on a clean slate so that we can move forward as a country. What's your opinion on this? And do you think that, you know, that's something that we should even consider? And if that does happen, then where does accountability fall into that?
Yeah, I disagree with Professor Madronsello on that. I think it's a high risk approach to trying to deal with our past, but I think it presents a high risk for our future. I have no issue with in one sense of giving amnesty to people for things happened in the past, but what does that say about our future? How do we then guarantee that in the future things will be different? And, you know, and again, I come back to the TRC. Effectively, what we've done is we've given amnesty to everyone because we haven't prosecuted anyone. So there was effectively an amnesty. Has it resolved the issues of accountability in our country? It hasn't. It's actually only made them worse. So my fear is, you know, I understand where Professor Madronsela is coming from on this. But I don't think it's a workable idea. It's 20 years too late. We maybe could have done this. And I know the issue was raised at, you know, in the aftermath of the arms deal, particularly, you know, in the late 2000s, that perhaps we should draw a line in the sand. And perhaps at that time, it might have been feasible to do that. And then you put in place the proper structures to take us forward. But we missed that opportunity, and I don't think now is the right time for that. I think that moment has passed us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to build on that, I mean, can I put you on the spot a little, Lawson? Do you feel that, and there was a comment I think the ANC chairperson made about the fact that, you know, the findings shouldn't be, I think he described it as it shouldn't be used as an axe for us to go after each other, and we should use it as a lesson to learn how to rebuild the ANC as an organization. And then, of course, there was, you know, the comments recently by the president, right, during SONA. I mean, do you think that rhetoric's been firm enough? Do you think it's been a little bit, I mean, the way we're talking about it here, you're quite clear. You're actually going, we've got to prosecute, we have to hold people accountable, blah, blah, blah. has that narrative been firm enough from people who should be condemning, you know, what's come up?
Look, I mean, I think we must deal with the two of them very differently. The president is speaking as president of the country. And I think, you know, he said two things. One is that insofar as the Zondo Commission makes recommendations for people to be investigated further and prosecuted, that the law enforcement agencies must do their work. He's been quite clear and consistent on that. And I think that's the right thing to do. On the other hand, he says when it comes to the structural recommendations that I spoke about earlier, that he's going to need some time and he'll report to Parliament in June this year on how the government are going to process those recommendations. So from the side of the president, you know, I may quibble about why he needs so long until June to respond, but respond he will, and we will need to make sure that he does do that. When it comes to Gwede Mantashe, who's speaking in his capacity as chairperson of the ANC and makes the comments that he made, Yatish, then I have serious concerns, because it's an internal political issue. We know that while not exclusively ANC leaders were involved in state capture and corruption, it was largely them because they are the governing party. And his plea was really to say, you know, we're going to destroy the ANC if we go after our own people who have been implicated, so we've got to be careful. Well, I'm sorry, I can't accept that. That if there's evidence of wrongdoing, whoever you happen to be,
right,
whether you are Gwede Mantashe or Zweli Mkhize or Cyril Ramaphosa, and the evidence points to you, then you must be investigated and, if necessary, prosecuted.
Absolutely,
because that's what the rule of law means. And we're a country that's proud to say that we are founded on the principle of the rule of law.
Yep.
And if we don't do that, then, as Garrett said earlier, you know, why does somebody who steals a loaf of bread get prosecuted and sent to jail, but somebody who steals R1 billion gets away with it?
Yeah, and either we're equal before the law or we're not. You know, when we... Sorry, my... hang on.
Garrett,
sorry, my mic was muted. That's the classic mistake. Either we're equal before the law or we're not, right? And We hear a lot about inequality in the world and all the rest of it. The most important equality we can have, Lawson, and this is what so many people in your generation fought for, is equality before the law. In other words, that no one is going to get special treatment, that there are no sacred cows. It doesn't matter what political or struggle credentials you have. If you have committed criminal activities and you've defrauded the state and thereby also have placed the people of South Africa in a precarious position, you must pay the price. There's no two ways about that, right?
It's simple. It's clear. It's been, you know, it's been one of the foundational principles of the liberation struggle as a whole. You know, you find it in the Freedom Charter. You find it resonate in our 1996 Constitution. Mm-hmm. That principle of equality before the law is there, has been there consistently. And yet, in the last 20, 25 years, we've consistently, as a society, ignored it, or at least our leaders have ignored it, and we've done nothing to point it out to them and say that that's not right, and we're going to do something about it. And that's, you know, that points to the issue of the culture of impunity, the lack of accountability, the lack of responsiveness, and we need to change that. And, you know, as a society, we need to be able to do that. And, you know, we can get into a whole other, debate and discussion about whether the current electoral system that we have is one that is appropriate for extracting the levels of accountability that we need.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps that's a discussion for another day.
So, all right, let's imagine everything works out well and we do end up sending some people to jail. That's obviously not going to solve all of our problems. Yeah, Tish already said there are structures and systems that need to be... they need to be cleaned out from top to bottom, and that's going to take a long time. But do you feel, I mean, it's very difficult to nail this down to something as basic and simplistic as I'm about to ask you, but do you feel optimistic when it comes to the general future of our country? And I hope your answer will be yes. And if so, tell us why.
Yeah, look, I am optimistic about the future, but I'm also realistic about the current challenges that we face and the amount of work that needs to be done in order to overcome these challenges. But I think, you know, if we take things like the Zondo Commission report seriously, and that we engage with it. And we, and in particular, I'm concerned about younger people becoming aware of what our society should look like based on what the Constitution, the picture the Constitution draws of the kind of society we want to create. And, you know, far too many of them have been disappointed by the failures of our society, of our state, to give them the kind of access to education, to healthcare facilities, to be able to get on in life. And we've got to show them that there is a possibility to change that. And if we don't do that, those young people are going to remain disillusioned, would remain outside of the mainstream of our society, eking out a living on the edges and thinking that that none of this works for us or for me. And we've got to change that mindset. We've got to show them that it is possible and that this principle of equality, you know, each person's vote is of equal value in as much as everyone is equal before the law. And we've got to show them that there's a better way. So I think, you know, certainly from my perspective, reaching out to younger people in various ways, individually, socially, and through organized civil society or structures, to engage with young people and what the future can and should look like for us as South Africans, given all the struggles that we've gone through over decades and decades to reach this point of democracy. And we've let people down, you know, and we can't carry on like that. So we've got to, you know, what's, you know, I've had conversations with people of my generation and older who've said, you know, we thought we'd be happy in our retirement now and not having to roll up our sleeves and enter the struggle once again. Uh-huh. But here we are. We're doing that. We have to.
Yeah.
In fact, on that point, Lawson, because we I think Gareth mentioned it earlier, but we do often try to bring it to a point where people can participate, right? Because that's, you know, what we try to drive as much as we can is not just debate, but also to go, what do people do? So, you know, you spoke about rolling up your sleeves. What does that look like for an average South African? How do you, you know, last week when we had Songezo, he like directed, I think, a lot of the people listening to a portal and said, you know, go here, look at the ways you can get involved, etc. How does the average man on the street put pressure, take these findings to heart, push for accountability? What are the things we can do in our day-to-day or in some way that can create that momentum or roll our sleeves up and get involved?
Well, you know, it's got to start at a community level by engaging with people that are around us, you know, not in heated political debates, but about the reality of the challenges that we face and how do we come together as a group of people to change that. And it's got to start at that grassroots level, as far as I'm concerned. At a different level, you know, the organization I work for, CASAC, together with Section 27, another NGO operating in the human rights, social justice space, are organizing a conference in 2 weeks' time, directed primarily at young people, seeking to engage them on the issues of constitutionalism and democracy. What are the key issues facing us as a society now moving forward? How do we change the current narrative around many of those issues? And what practical action can we take in order to change the trajectory of our development as a society? So, you know, that's, you know, a start. It's one conference, but which will hopefully roll out into a bigger series of discussions across the country. But for people to become engaged in those issues, that conference will be live streamed for the 2 days of its duration on the 28th of Feb and the 1st of March. And, you know, Songezo, you say, was here last week, and I'm sure he spoke about the Rivonia Circle and discussions that they're seeking to engage in. And I think all of those things together can help to start building a new momentum of engagement. None of us have the solutions written down anywhere. We've got to work together, find those solutions and make sure that they get implemented. So I'm hopeful because I think there are enough people out there who are willing to do the hard work to make sure that this country does, in due course, reflect that vision that the Constitution sets out.
And as Bonang Mohale said the week before, it starts with conversations like we're having with you this morning. And I, again, just to thank you for your time, Lawson, it's great to not only tap into your overall wisdom, but also to have some of your experience of what this must have been like and how everything unfolded all those years ago when we started to put together a dream of what South Africa might be. Hopefully we're not too far off. I mean, it's by no means perfect, and I still think that South Africa's got lots to do and lots to learn and plenty of work to do. There's much ahead of us. But I do think that we are still a place with enormous potential, and we have people who are, I think, at their heart good and who are trying to, you know, make a living, trying to create an environment that their children can grow up in and have a chance to explore, experience, and have the best possible existence. And we've all got to work really hard at doing that. So it's great to have someone like you who's certainly living that kind of goal, of priority, of principle. And I appreciate your time this morning.
Well, thank you, Gareth. Thank you to the team. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I agree it's an important one. And we need to make sure that more of these conversations happen in different spaces, so that, you know, and we don't always have to agree with each other, mm-hmm. but having the conversation is important.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Just to your point, I got a great email from someone this morning who sent me this quote, and maybe I'll just finish off with this. Our culture worldwide has accepted two big lies. The first is that if you disagree with someone, you must fear or hate them. The second is that to love someone means you have to agree with everything they believe or do. Both are nonsense. You don't have to compromise convictions to be compassionate. And I think that's a really good way to end it this morning. Lawson Naidu, what a pleasure to have you. Yatish Lebang, we will see you next week for some more of this. This is us. CliffCentral.com.